Hello and welcome to Sandy Klein's Conversations with Creative Women. My name is Chad Dugatz. I am not Sandy Klein, but rest assured, she is with me today. I am the producer of the show, and for this very special episode of the show, I felt as though it was time we interview Miss Sandy Klein. So, hello, Sandy.
Well, Chad, here I am on the other side of the table here.
Literally on the other side
of America. A little unnerving, I might add.
Sandy came to me about 2.5 years ago now with this idea for a show. And at the time, I was very intrigued. Let's go through that first meeting, that first conversation. What brought you to my studio? What brought you to wanting to do this show?
First of all, a match was made. You grew up in the same town that I live in New Jersey. And my kids, they're younger than you, but you both went to the same high school. And one of our neighbors who's in SAG and AFTRA, I ran into him at a meeting, at a union meeting. And somehow, I don't remember all the ins and outs of this, but a conversation ensued. He knew I was at 1010 Wins, then I was looking to kind of branch out. I've always wanted to host my own radio show. And Alex made this match with you and me. Now, you're going to have to refresh my memory. I'd rather you tell me what that first meeting was like.
She came to me with, at the time, wanting just to tell stories from women whose stories were not being heard.
Yeah.
Yes. And the creative part wasn't necessarily in the mix. It was other women's stories.
Right.
And when we actually look back at the 2+ years of the show, I think we've actually touched all sorts of women.
If we determine you're creative, you're creative.
Yeah, well, we put that stamp down. We own it. We started the show 2.5 years ago. At that time, what was your vision?
Well, I'm going to answer that a little obtusely, because when I was at WINS, and I could still be at WINS, it was a wonderful experience, but I knew that it was time to move on. I wasn't sure what it was exactly that I wanted to do. I wanted to have a show, but initially I thought, wouldn't it be funky to interview people who have unusual jobs? You know, who writes the headlines for the New York Post and the Daily News? You know, headless body in a topless bar, and it just turned out that that gentleman died not too long ago. But what's it like if you're a professional basketball player and you never play, but all you do is sit on the bench and then you practice with the team? What must that be like? And I thought, wouldn't that be kind of a cool thing to just have these little vignettes and put them on the WINS website? Well, they didn't think that was so cool. And then it really never kind of went anywhere. And then I thought, if I'm going to do something, I really should do this kind of full time and leave all news. And it made a lot of sense. A very good friend of mine basically staged an intervention as I was coming up with all these ideas, and I didn't know if they could fly. And then I just realized that there are all these really great women out there who you and I have never heard of and who are doing wonderful things but just don't have the same name recognition that a Beyoncé has or Martha Stewart has, and who've been interviewed ad nauseum, and there's nothing more that you learn about them. And that's, I guess, the genesis of this. Let's find these terrifically creative, exciting, fascinating, accomplished women who you've never heard of.
And we should backtrack. You were at WINS Radio. WINS Radio is a New York City all news radio program.
Good point, right?
Tell us about your job there. What was your role at WINS Radio?
Well, first of all, it's the nation's largest all news radio station. So it's really big time. And when I got a job there, I was really sort of stunned, because basically my career was mostly in FM radio, and I've worked all up and down the dial, mostly in music stations doing news. I started off as an evening drive anchor. I was always an anchor. And so back then, the hours were divided into thirds, so we would be on for 20 minutes each. And that was really making the donuts. I had never had an experience like that before, and I thought, oh, my God, am I qualified for this? And it was a lot of hard work, but, boy, it was – I mean, everybody listens to that radio station now. Terrestrial radio is a whole different ballgame. I mean, my children don't listen to the radio. Actually, they didn't listen when I worked there. I'm not getting my news from there, whatever. But I had a really wonderful time, but I worked my ass off there. It was really hard.
What year did you start at WINS?
I think 1993. I had freelanced a little bit before that, but I was hired full-time in 1993.
In 1993, in New York City, was the first World Trade Center bombing. Were you on air at that time?
I don't think it happened during my shift. No, but I certainly worked there. And I certainly, I mean, I'm not jumping around, but I was on my way to work on 9/11.
Yeah.
And that was really pretty intense.
You know, we hear so many stories of people who were there on 9/11 and victim stories, but often we don't actually let the journalists tell their story in this context, especially radio journalists, because we're so hidden behind the scenes.
Correct.
So what was your experience on September 11th?
That's a lot clearer to me than the first World Trade Center bombing. I live in New Jersey. I had that morning an appointment with a physical therapist. I had tennis elbow, and I was going to have some electric stim, and I had no idea what happened. And I left the office, I guess, about 9 or 9:30. I don't really remember, and I don't remember what time the first plane hit the towers, but something was going on. And I got a call from the station. I don't think I could cross the bridge. It was just nuts. And they said, get yourself to Jersey City, where there's a really big hospital. I think it's a Christ hospital. There's a lot I just don't remember. As you get older, you don't remember a lot of stuff. And the walking wounded were being ferried from across the Hudson to this hospital. I mean, that became clear that there's a horrible, horrible event had just taken place. And there were these people getting off ferries that were had dust and debris all over them, and it was the most surreal thing. And I just basically, stood there interviewing doctors, outside the OR, and patients coming through. Everybody was just so it's more than traumatized, just like walking, couldn't, like zombie-like. It was just stunning. Certainly, we had reporters downtown and, all over the city. And so I spent my day there. And then the next day, I was coming to work and I wasn't going to be an anchor because we were doing special coverage. And only emergency vehicles could cross the bridge. But because I had press plates and worked for a radio station, I was able to cross the bridge. And they were saying to me, go to the blood bank, go to hospitals and find people who are looking for their wounded relatives and friends. Oh, God, was that something else? I mean, I remember being at the, New York City Blood Bank or whatever, and Michael Bloomberg was there giving blood. And then I went to hospitals, and there were people standing there with pictures of a son, a father, a daughter, an aunt. Have you seen this person? It was, oh, my God, it was just unbelievable.
I think when there is a tragedy, a lot of reporters and journalists hide behind their microphone or behind the lens of their camera and don't get affected by what they're reporting on.
That's what you're always taught. Yeah. It's not about you. You're delivering the message.
But they also use it as protection.
In what sense?
This is not happening to me. I'm just reporting on what's happening around me. Meanwhile, it absolutely is happening to you.
Oh, sure. And I'm sure that there were people, much more connected, much more impacted than I was by virtue of where they were on that hideous, horrible day.
Now, you got to report on some horrible things in our nation. Do you remember any great stories and fun stories from your WINS days?
Well, actually, I was hoping you would go there just on a lighter note. I'll never forget this. I mean, reporting was not my thing. I mean, I did report in the past for some FM stations. I would do both. But I loved it when the weather was really horrible, when we would have these massive snowstorms, and I would beg to go out, and they would let me. And I'll never forget, one day I was reporting, and the city basically came to a standstill. We had this massive snowstorm. I don't remember what year it was. Who cares? And they let me go out with a microphone. And one of the first things I did, WINS at that time was in Midtown on, for those who live in New York, on 57th and 7th. And I walked over to Tony Madison Avenue thinking, what would be open on a day like today when nothing was functioning? And there was a handbag store, Lana Marks Handbags. And apparently she, unbeknownst to me back then, was really famous, a handbag designer. And the store was open, and I went in. And here's this salesperson who schlepped in from the borough of Queens into Manhattan. I mean, who's buying handbags? But anyway, I did a piece with her with the Janet Jackson $6,000 handbag on my shoulder. And there was the Princess Di handbag. I mean, that was crazy. And that really got my juices flowing. So I left her, and then I wound up on Fifth Avenue at Harry Winston Jewelers. And there were people in the store. Are you kidding? They were so nice to me. First of all, I looked like a bag lady. I looked homeless. I had this big old coat on and boots and sort of shuffling along. But they were pretty savvy. I mean, this was free publicity for them. And I did a piece. I didn't interview the customers, but I talked to one of the salespeople about Harry Winston. And look, that, I mean, I guess if you have to buy jewels, you know, neither rain, snow, sleet, or hail. And they let me do my reporting with a $250,000 diamond choker around my neck. Diamond chokers are heavy, you know. And I spent the entire day just going to this very Tony French restaurant, Le Cote Basque, and they weren't, you know, who's going to come out for lunch? And they really did think that I was undesirable, and they tried to shoo me away. And I said to them, well, you know, you just lost some free publicity. And they, when they saw the Mike logo, you know, 1010 Wins, they let me in. And they actually even offered me hot chocolate at the bar.
Nice.
So I, those are the things that I remember.
If you're just joining us today, my name is Chad Dugatz. I'm the producer of Sandy Klein's Conversations with Creative Women, and I am sitting here with Sandy Klein, the host of the program and executive producer and the brainchild behind it. We have interviewed some amazing women. And when I say we, I feel like...
Oh, yeah. It's we.
So one of our common conversations is these stories just need to be heard. You have told that to me time and time again. This story just needs to get out here. And you say it from a place of passion. What drives that passion? Why must these stories get out?
Well, because I think that these are really fabulous women who may be well-known within their field, but that's sort of the end of it. I mean, not to a person, but a lot of times when I approach somebody and ask if they'll be on the program, the question is why? And that just completely flabbergasts me. These are... Again, women who may be well-known in the museum world, but you go and you see an exhibit that really moves you or that speaks to you. How do you stage an exhibit? How does that work? How do you start your own business? What is it like to be a comedian and hope that you're funny enough that somebody that you'll get an agent? Or what's that like the first time you do stand-up? How do you write a book? You know, a whole bunch of years ago, I was asked to co-host a public radio show called Arts Alive from the Algonquin. It was on our local public radio station, New York City, WNYC. And the thrust of that show was that a very famous person would be the host and invite his or her friends, I guess relatives, although it was really mostly friends or colleagues, onto the show, and they would have a conversation. And my job was to make sure that it flowed well, and I would do the introductions for everybody, and then I'd, you know, give it over to you as the guest host, and you'd have this conversation. What would happen is the executive producer and I would eat at a different table at the Algonquin Hotel, and the guests would sit at another table. And then when it was time for the show to begin and it was live, I'd join the table, and I think it was an hour. And the reason I am bringing this up when you ask about that is one of the shows featured Wendy Wasserstein, the fabulous playwright, as the host, and two or three of her friends, the playwright Christopher Durang and I think Paul Rudnick, actually. Anyway, they all went to the Yale Drama School. And after the introductions, they got started. And Wendy Wasserstein, by the way, was an amazingly gracious, lovely, friendly woman. And they're having their conversation. And not too long into this, I'm saying to myself, you know, this is really inside baseball. You know, I mean, they're naming names that nobody else knew. And you remember the time when we were in class and blah, blah, blah. And so I thought, okay, Sandy, time for you to step in. And I just looked at Wendy and asked, how do you write a play? I couldn't imagine how you do that. And she sort of stared at me for a second, and then she answered. I mean, how do you write the dialogue? What are you thinking? It's different than writing a book. And that was the theme of this show. How did you get to where you are? And even though you're not super famous or don't have 5 million Twitter followers, you're a force to be reckoned with. How in God's name did you start leading expeditions to Antarctica? The list is endless, and I could be doing this for another 150 years and have barely still scratched the surface.
And you have said that on many
like ad nauseum. Mm-hmm.
But I think there's something to that. And I think the other testament to the show we're creating is I am a man. Like, you can hear it in my voice, obviously. But at no point in this show have I felt put off by any of the messages or the feminist side of the show, because I don't think we're doing a feminist show.
No.
Do you?
No. I think that maybe it sounds, you know, a little hackneyed these days, but I just don't feel that women are getting enough, not exposure, but out there enough. And there's a lot of dismissiveness. You know, why aren't they as interesting or, as I use the term in quotes, sexy? And again, while they may be successful in their milieu, you should get to know who these are. What about this woman? I mean, I use sometimes the same examples. Blind at the age of 10. Born in Germany, blind at the age of 10, you know, nothing was going to stop her. Winds up going to Nepal, goes through the Himalayas on horseback and is shocked to see how blind children are treated like second-class citizens and brings Braille to the Himalayas. Do you know Sabriya Tenberken? Of course you don't, damn it. But now you do and should. But she's not out there tooting her own horn. Yeah, it makes me... I get a little emotional about that. And, you know, we don't hit a home run every time. And there have been definitely times I've sat at the opposite end of this table and thought, well, this isn't so, who cares? But that's okay.
And we should say for those shows, those are the ones we get comments back on. I love that interview.
You deserve to meet them and you should meet them is basically how I feel.
So then I get to push that back on you.
Yeah.
When I recommended this idea for a program, you balked at first.
I did.
So why?
Because... I don't remember a lot of stuff, and I'm usually not in the spotlight that way. Or if I am, it's on my terms, you know. I mean, I didn't really quite think of it that way as being on in terms of being on the radio because there's an invisibility. Yes, I'm, you know, helping you get your day started, or you know, giving you information that you may not know about. But there's not a disconnect. It's just different. You know, I mean, my personality would come across in doing news, but still there's that distance that you can keep yourself over here. And you know, I'm not being disingenuous and I say, I don't know how interesting I am. You know, I mean, it's natural for me to talk to people and I have a lot of fun. But I really love knowing about who you are. And I don't suffer fools gladly. Hey, hell, if you're born, I'm out of here. Are you out of here?
No.
Oh, okay.
So let's go back, though. What were you voted in high school?
Yeah, I don't know if that's painful or not, but I was voted most talkative by such a landslide. I worked on the senior poll. I was the senior editor, myself and Bob Harris, whose brother, by the way, is Ed Harris, the actor.
Oh.
Yeah, Bob, I think, became a veterinarian. Anyway.
Such a disappointment.
Yeah, exactly. But so one of our jobs as senior editors was to conduct the senior poll. And I'll never forget this night. I can't remember exactly what happened 10 minutes ago, but we were at my house, Bob and I, and all the votes were in ballots, handwritten ballots, and we were counting, you know, likely, most likely to succeed, most popular, most athletic, and we came to most talkative. And my father was helping us count the ballots. My graduating class was 225. But then came the most talkative ballots, and it was Sandy, 127. The next person, 2. Sandy, 198. The next person, 4. And I won by such a landslide that the next closest vote getter had 6. And my father just sat there with his head in his hand and said, "This is what you won?" And I said, "Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't going to be smartest or whatever, you know. And so at least I won something. But yeah, I've been a talker most of my life. But I'm a good listener."
And then after high school, you went to college. But you actually went to 2 colleges.
I sure did.
You had 2 undergraduate experiences, which is not very common.
Why? People do transfer, don't
people
they?
But the majority of people stay. If they enroll in a 4-year college, most people do stay. I would say the minority transfer.
I guess.
You first went to Athens, Ohio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't you wish you guys said Greece, although today it's sort of a mess. No, I went to Ohio University.
Exactly. What soured you on that experience?
I went to a public high school that was very, you know, heavy emphasis on academics. And I wasn't by far the smartest kid in the class. And I think that the guidance counselors, not dispensed with me, but certainly were looking for the ones who were going to the Ivies or whatever. And so I didn't, I think I'll major in journalism and where to go. And so, Ohio University. You know, and my parents were fine with that, but they weren't college graduates. So we kind of left it up to, I mean, my dad and I did go look at American University. I mean, I remember Chad taking the SATs. And at the bottom when it would say, "Go to the next page," I just blurted out, "Why?" I think all I got was points for signing my name. Ugh, horrible. So anyway, I think I got waitlisted at Temple or something, and I think Ohio University was basically the only school that accepted me. And my parents drove me out there, and Crook Hall, that was my dorm, and we walked into my dorm room, and they had triple bunks. I met my 2 roommates, both of them from Ohio, and I'll never forget one of the girls' mothers said, "Ugh, we're so excited to have Connie room with Sandy. This is the first Jewish girl she's ever met." And my mother, "You go, girl," came back and said, "And we feel the same way about Connie. She's the first Presbyterian we ever met." And I thought, "Hey, Ma, that's pretty cool." But my parents did say when they left, they really sort of felt that they had were leaving me in jail. It's a beautiful school, but you know what the hell was I doing there?
So it wasn't for you, and then you ended up transferring.
Yeah, but I would like to say probably one of the things that was instrumental in my saying get out of here was I did have a date at Ohio, and he took me to a drive-in to see Bonnie and Clyde, and we were sitting in the car, and there was like a small tractor trailer next to us, watching it, and all of a sudden I heard moo. I thought, what's that? And then there were some more moos, and it turned out that the family next to us had brought their cows to the movie. I said, I got to get the hell out of here. That was probably, you know, a seminal moment in my year there.
It sounds like bovine
bovine intervention.
I couldn't even say it in a straight
God, that's pathetic.
If you're just joining us, my name is Chad Dugatz, interviewing Sandy Klein here on Sandy Klein's Conversations with Creative Women. So you left Ohio and you moved back to New York.
Yeah, I went completely the other extreme.
And what did you major when you came back to NYU?
I majored in film, radio, and television at NYU. Yeah.
So my point in asking this line of questions is from high school on,
yeah,
you've known what you were doing.
I wanted to have some form of notoriety. First, I thought I could be an actress. Then, that didn't work. I knew that I had to have, that I just couldn't be in an office somewhere. Clearly, I wouldn't be in an accounting office because I barely got through math, and I spent a lot of summers in summer school for math. But I just had to be
heard.
Yeah, heard. You know, I also went to a high school where, you know, and I was popular, but I didn't look like, you know, the other girls, adorable cheerleader type, and so I had what I would consider to be an overdeveloped personality, and I just knew that I had to use it in some form. But I just kind of fell into radio, and I think I did because my favorite line is I have a face for radio. And also, what worked for me was back then, not right after I got out of school because I didn't go right into radio right after I graduated, was that I had a deep voice.
And I think we'll be doing Conversations with Creative Women a disservice if we don't talk about what was it like to be a woman on air in radio, doing news or doing morning radio on FM with some shock jock wannabes where they were trying to get the yucks and you were playing the straight female against that. What was that like being a female in that high testosterone environment?
Well, actually, it wasn't horrible for me for most of the experience. My first radio gig, as it were, was hosting a show called at the InTouch Radio Network for the blind and visually handicapped. And I had my own show, and it was really pretty terrific. It was volunteer. Nobody knew that. But that got me to my first paying job, which was a station outside of New York City, WVOX, and I did morning news. And that was just great. I mean, I really cut my teeth on that, and it was really terrific. I'll never forget that when I can't remember his name, one of our governors, was it Thomas Wilson? Somebody, I can't remember, died. They sent me to the church, and I had to tape the homily that the priest gave. It was a Catholic church. I didn't know what a homily was. And I remember walking into this room, which was apparently the vestment room where the priest was getting ready to go. And I said, what is a homily? You know, and he said, here, give me the tape recorder. And he put it in a lectern. And he said he would press play and record when the homily began. And I said, well, thank you very much. And that landed me my first radio gig in New York City, which was part-time at KTU Radio, which was the biggest disco station around. Mm-hmm. Paco and Roscoe, all these really big names. And I worked the weekends. I was pregnant at the time, married and pregnant, and one of the disc jockeys just was very unnerved about working with somebody who was almost 9 months pregnant. And so it was morning drive on Saturdays, and he said, I can't do this by my, what if you give birth? What should I do? I said, you don't have to do anything. And he said, but that still unnerved him. So my poor husband had to come in at 3 o'clock in the morning with me, and back then there were typewriters. Yes. Only, and his head would be in the typewriter. You know, I mean, he just falling asleep. And I didn't give birth on the radio.
We should say your husband also came in the first time we met one-on-one and vetted me.
Oh, really? I guess I do remember that, but I didn't think it was being vetted. Okay, maybe it was.
Oh,
yeah. And then he fell in love with you.
And the respect is absolutely mutual, as
right.
You're very well aware.
Right.
We've had some amazing women in here. We've, on several occasions, say we don't need to interview Martha Stewart or Beyonce again.
Right.
And we have used those two names
over and over again
in our private conversations.
Yes.
And this is no disrespect to either of those two
of
women at all. It's just that we don't need to be another outlet for them. Mm-hmm. Having said that.
Yeah.
Who would you love to interview? What name out there that we've all known? Is it a first lady? I mean, we have not had many politicians. I don't think we
have. And we're going to have one,
okay,
by the
great.
Way. We're working on that. You know, this is a really embarrassing question because I'm honestly not sure. And I suppose I should have thought about that before I came on, but you didn't give me the questions in advance, so that kind of sucks. I can't tell you.
Obviously, we have two women right now vying for the president's office, right?
Why in God's name would I want to interview them? What would they tell me that you haven't heard ad nauseum already? Why? No. I'd rather interview somebody who's trying to make her way on, you know, maybe on the local level. And in a half an hour, what am I going to get out of them? What am I supposed to say to her? What really happened in Benghazi? I don't care. And what was it really like being married to Bill? Come on. And I don't want to interview Carly Fiorina just because. What a great thing to have interviewed Dr. Vanita Chennault, the president of Haskell Indian Nations University. You know, excuse me. Do you know how many, you know, universities there are for Native Americans and Alaska Natives? No, you don't.
But
and
you
now
need
you
to.
Do.
And you need
well,
to.
Well, you should. You just should.
So what I'm hearing from you right now is that passion. That passion you just gave is exactly the passion you gave in my first studio when we first met.
Mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
enrolled me mm-hmm. in the vision for Conversations with Creative Women, then under a different name.
Mm-hmm.
We've expanded in the past couple months. This operation is no longer just a radio show. We're no longer a podcast and syndicated on local radio. We are also now a website.
Mm-hmm.
And we have not talked about this at all on air.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about sandyklineshow.com.
Okay.
This website has been in development now for, I think, 7-8 months.
Mm-hmm.
We launched a couple months ago.
Right. Early September.
What is your hope and aspirations for sandyklineshow.com?
Well, again, it's another way to meet these women. You can certainly listen to the podcast on the show. I love the fact that there's an opportunity for women to write a blog, a personal essay, an opinion piece, whatever, an experience about her life and share it. We also have this What's New column. What's happening in your career or making matches for people? It's just another outlet, another way to engage you and have people join in. And I'm so open to suggestions and opportunities. And again, opinions. There's so many classy broads out there who we don't know. And maybe we'll get to meet through this. And here's an avenue for them.
And we should say that we have been solicited by people who want to be on the show.
Yeah, isn't that great? People call us up. And also, I don't think I've been turned down. Maybe a couple of times by people who either their schedules don't jibe with ours, but for the most part, we're not dismissed. And I need to say this. I need to take over for a sense. I don't think that this would be as successful or as joyful as it is if I was working with somebody else. You have an amazing, and this really is a compliment, feminine streak. There's an excitement, appreciation, a dignity that you have with these guests and a commitment to this show. I stepped in it when I met you.
The feeling, as you know, is mutual. This is the highlight of my week, is working on this show.
Oh, come on.
It is, because I know what's going to be happening for 5 hours a week. I know there's normalcy. And I know we're getting messages out.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels good. Just like you said before, I know I needed to do something and be heard or be seen or make a racket.
Mm-hmm.
This is my racket.
Well, that really touches me because you have a lot in your life professionally and you do a lot of stuff. How great is it to also have a working relationship and a professional relationship that is filled with such respect, admiration, and love? Really, it's been, what a bonus for me, honestly.
It has been fun. So what's up next?
I have no goals except to get more people to listen to this. That's all. I just think because the women are worth it.
Well, if you want to find out more about the women we have had on the show, please do check out the new website. It is sandyklineshow.com. On Twitter, on Facebook, we are at Sandy Kline Show, and our email address is sandyklineshow@gmail.com. I don't think we could have made it any easier.
Well, my name's out there.
Sandy, a pleasure. Do you want to sign off the show or should I?
I think you should do that.
I'm Chad Dugatz for Sandy Kline. This has been Sandy Kline's Conversations with Creative Women. Next week, you're back in the big chair.
I am. Thanks, Chad.